Blog Talk Radio.
Excuse me, yes sir, I understand, but do you actually have the word yes in your vocabulary?
I guess it started when I was a kid.
If you said I couldn't do it, I did. Always had a stubborn streak, put a wall in front of me.
You on?
And I'll find a way to get around it.
That's our introductory song.
Oh.
A lot of small town talk that I'd never leave. Oh, and you know who you are. You all play the part in pushing me on to my dream. I want to thank everyone who ever told me no. Pack it up and get back home. It kept me going, knowing I would prove them wrong. Yeah, I knew it all along. Without them, I'd have given up a long time ago. And so, I want to thank everyone who ever told me no. Made my music for a man behind the desk. He said, sorry, what you got, I just don't get. Oh, but here I am today, standing on this stage. And I wonder even now if he gets it, yeah. I want to thank everyone who ever told me no. Pack it up and get back home. It kept me going, knowing I would prove them wrong. Yeah, I knew it all along. Without them, I'd have given up a long time ago. And so, I want to thank everyone who ever told me no.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As y'all know, it is Wednesday night, and it is Off the Chain time. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and that is one of my theme songs, because I want to tell everyone, thank you that told me no all through the years, told me I was not broad enough, I couldn't do it because I was too short, because I was too old, you name it, they told me I couldn't do it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, because of you, look at me now. So thank all of the teachers that told me no. Thank all the family members that told me no. Thank all the friends that told me no. We are here because of y'all, and I appreciate it so much. Ran the numbers this morning. My voice is fading in and out, trying to get pneumonia, but it's that time of year. But this morning when I ran the numbers, just on the show alone, ladies and gentlemen, we're at 57,000-plus listeners. We're less than 3,000 listeners away from 60,000 just on the show. When you add all the podcasts this thing goes up on, we are at 73,000-plus. I figure by the end of the year, we will be at well over 60,000 on the show and well over 80,000 worldwide. We're heard in over 70 countries. And for that, I am so grateful. And I have to give a big shout out to the country of Australia. They're our biggest listener on this show, which is absolutely amazing. Tonight, we have a marvelous, marvelous author. He and I have been Facebook friends for a while now. He was introduced to me by another friend of mine. And the genre that Lindsay Downs writes in is interesting, to say the least. This is what I know about him. He's been an avid reader ever since he was old enough to hold a red leather-bound first edition copy of Sir Walter Scott's The Lady of the Lake in his lap. Now, that is a hard book to read. But to him, it only seemed natural that at some point in his life, he would take up pen and paper to start writing. And over time, his skills slightly improved, which he attributed to his English teachers. His breakthrough came about in the mid-1970s when he read a historical romance written by Sir Jean Golan. I hope I didn't massacre that name. And the title of that book was Angelique. This French husband and wife team opened his eyes to the real world of fiction. Stories about romance, beautiful damsels, handsome heroes, and plots which kept him hooked. And of course, being a man, he had to keep his reading hidden from others, as at that time it wasn't appropriate reading for men. Why, I don't know, but it wasn't. You know, we stereotype male and female, what we should read and what we shouldn't. With this newfound appreciation of the written word, he took up other books and devoured them like a starving person with a plate of food. He then attempted to write again. He wasn't satisfied, so once again he put it aside for years as life took over. Finally, in the early years of the new millennium, he tried again to write, and once again he was met with limited success. At least now he was able to get past the first page or two. And lo and behold, in 2006, a life-changing event brought him back to his first love. He took a job as a security officer, and that allowed him plenty of time to read different genres. His favorite was Regency. And as he poured through everyone he could get his hands on, he knew it would be something he wanted to attempt to write. So since 2012, when his debut Regency Romantic Suspense was released, he was hooked, and he has, except for a few contemporaries, focused on that genre. So tonight, author Lindsay Down joins us. Thank you, Lindsay, for spending an hour with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure, madame.
It's been a journey getting here, I'm going to tell you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, we had to postpone one, and then we ran you back up to another time, and then I was able to get you on, so it all worked out like it was supposed to, and I am so grateful.
Finally.
And appreciative. Yeah, I appreciate your patience with everything that was going on in my life.
Well, with, you know, among other things, with everything going on in your life, plus also, you know, being a writer, that's the one thing that you have to have is a lot of patience. Because things don't come quickly to you. You know, you have to slowly work your way through the sources and everything.
That is true.
You know, from
that
the first word to the last word.
So let's go back in time a little bit, Lindsay, because your bio talking about reading The Lady of the Lake, and I have seen that story, and it is very hard to read. How in the world did you get your hands on that? What in your
copy.
Young?
My father had a copy.
Really?
And I was intrigued by it, by the cover, by the leather bound binding of it, and I knew I had to be very careful taking, you know, with it. So I very carefully took it out, sat down on a footstool, and opened it up, and started reading it, and that just got me hooked. And to this day, it's one of these days I'm going to go back and read it again. It's been, we won't say how many decades ago that I read it. I'm not about, women aren't the only ones who hide their age. Some of us men do too.
I don't hide my age. I earned every day of my age, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
I'm lucky to be here.
So, like I said, one of these days I'm going to go back and read it again, get it, buy a copy. It won't be a leather bound first edition, of course, but.
Well, what was it besides the, because I know it being leather bound as a child, it drew you in just to pull the book off the bookshelf. But once you got into it, what was it about the work itself that kept you involved in it?
The way Sir Walter Scott put the words together, drawing a picture. I was able to see in my mind what he was writing.
Wow.
And that was what intrigued me with it.
So for the people that don't know what The Lady of the Lake is about, give them a little bit of synopsis about that book.
I can't. It's been so many years since I've read it. I can't remember.
So,
I'd have to go online to get us to find out what it's about. It's been about 63 years since I read it.
So, now, ladies and gentlemen, y'all can't go read it right now either. Y'all got to wait till the show's over. So, just sit tight and go get it later. All right, then tell me about Angelique.
Angelique, I happened to run across those books, that book, Angelique, in a bookstore. The title intrigued me, and the cover intrigued me, and so I bought it. Quite ashamedly, it seemed like, if I remember correctly, the cashier was kind of like looking at me like, "What are you buying this for?" I was in my late teens when I bought it. And I said, sounds interesting. And I'd read the back cover blurb. I knew about that kind of stuff. But it was just reading about her, Angelique, and her adventures was just intriguing. It was fascinating. And how she was able to do all the things, in the different books that she was able to do. I had like five or six of them, and I read each one of them a couple of times. This was, like I said, this was back in the 60s, and one of these days, that's another set of books that I'm going to, one of these days, dig out and read again. Going back and catching my youth, but reading books from my youth again.
Well, the thing that I find interesting is that and this goes years back too, when a woman would go into a bookstore and buy a book written by a guy author doing guy things, and we're putting all this in air quotes, no eyes are raised. But if a guy wants to read something like Angelique, people look at you like you have two heads. Talking about a double standard, that is a double standard.
Back then it was a double standard. And even to this day, to a degree, it might be considered a double standard. That is one reason why I love ebooks. Because you can read, I can go to a place, someplace. As a matter of fact, I did a bunch of years ago. I spent a couple hours over in Weatherfield, Connecticut at the motor vehicle department. I had to renew my car registration. And I was reading a Regency romance. So I can't remember which one. But I had it on my phone. Nobody knew that I was reading a Regency romance. if I was, you know, if I had the paperback book with me, you know, everybody would know.
And you shouldn't have to hide. And you should not have to hide. No, you shouldn't have to. And the reason I say that is because it doesn't matter what we read. There's always to learn. And in the Regency romances, there's a lot of history involved, is there not?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, to a degree, it depends on who you're reading. I'd rather not mention any names, only because it wouldn't be fair to authors who are still that are writing Regency that I don't include their name. But it's in a lot of cases, you know, there is history, there is you know, a historical event that happens in the book, and you go to the reader gets to go to historical places. Like in a couple of my books, I've mentioned Almax, which was a very exclusive place for simple terms, a dance hall in Regency England, where you just didn't go because you wanted to go. You had to buy your way in. You had to be approved by the patronesses of Almax to be permitted to go in, to go there on a Wednesday evening for a ball. And even though they were out of fashion for the most part in Regency England, if a gentleman went, he had to wear knee breeches, stockings, white silk stockings, black knee breeches, and a black, I think it was a cutaway. He couldn't wear trousers. He had to wear knee breeches. Even in Regency England, and in Regency England, you know, trousers, gentlemen, trousers were the thing. You know, you wore trousers, you know, to a ball. You know, and it's just fascinating.
It sounds like it.
And
so,
in
your books, I have pulled them up and looked at some of the blurbs. Not only do you add a little bit of history, but you also add intrigue and suspense, mm-hmm. and in many of them, a dead body.
I think almost every one of them has a dead body in it at one point or another. I don't write pure Regency romance. I write Regency romantic suspense. And I got into that because a lot of contemporary authors, even Jane Austen herself, you know, they were writing romance. They were writing this great romance. But if you really look at some of the authors, at least the contemporary ones, in some of their books, there is suspense going on. So I said, okay, but she's calling it a romance. Well, why don't I take and write romantic suspense where 50% romance and 50% suspense? You know,
I
bring
like that.
those two subgenres together in my book, and that's what I do. And in every one of my books, I always bring in suspense. And I think it's interesting, the cover that you have on Facebook, and, you know, for promoting tonight's show, is the cover for A House Party to Die For. I don't need to see the whole cover. I know that one.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, currently up for pre-order right now, and it's releasing on the 16th on Monday, is A Murder Solved. In A House Party to Die For, I'm going along writing it. I come to the end of the book. The Earl and the Countess, who have been married, have said goodbye to friends and family, and they go out to the maze, and they're going to do their thing. Even then, I keep it clean. But the thing is, I never named the murderer in that book. When I got to the end of the book and wrote the end, I sat there stunned. I said, I don't have a murderer.
Wow.
Who did it? Who killed Lady Anne? It's the first time I had ever written a book that did not have the murderer at the end of the book. So then I had to wait. House Party to Die For is book 5. I then had to wait for this one, book 8, to come out to name the murderer, because this one, book 8, takes place at a house party also. And now, you have a few questions regarding the murder last year at my estate, Justin asked. Justin Earl held a house party last year. Robert and I do. She could feel her face warm on saying his name. It was interesting how easily it flowed from her lips. Chelsea, you see what I mean now? That poor girl is smitten by that impossible man, Amelia teased. There's a little touch, a smidge of romance there. I am not, and he's not intolerable, Melissa retorted in her defense and his. Even to her, the words sounded weak. Taking in a breath, she did her best to collect her thoughts. That was when she glanced beyond Robert to Prudence, who was smiling. Now, I've mentioned Justin, Robert, Chelsea, Amelia, Melissa. The thing is, with all of my books in this particular series, Rakes and Rogue Hells mystery series, they build on each other.
Mm.
You follow me?
Yes.
So Justin and Prudence are the primary characters in book 5. Chelsea is the female lead in book, I think, 3. So I'm bringing characters from the previous books into the newest one that I'm writing. Now let me continue. Earlier, I made mention of the locket. If I'm not mistaken, it was originally in the possession of Lady Patricia, who was in attendance at this house party. If it had been given to, it had been given to her by Viscount Clifton, whose Christian name is Douglas. Now, to understand that, why she pointed out the Christian name, you have to go back to A House Party to Die For and the locket that Prudence found. I'm not telling you I'm not giving you the clue.
You're not giving me the clue. You're just giving us the characters.
I'm giving you the character, but now there could be, now Douglas could be an important clue to the murder, or he could not be. And the Viscount had been a guest at my house party and left with the others. Melissa, let me ask you this. How do you know Lady Patricia was given the locket by him? Justin asked. And then it goes on. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But the whole thing is, right now, I'm bringing in the mystery, the suspense. Why is this locket so important? What is it about this locket that is so important?
So it would behoove your readers to start with book 1, which is...
Yeah. La Contessa and the Marquis.
And then it goes, how many books are in that particular series?
In this particular series, there are currently 8. Let me see if I can find the list of them. Okay. The second book is An Earl's Queen. That's Chelsea is in that one. The third one is Married by Christmas. The fourth is My Lady Valentine. 5, of course, is A House Party to Die For. 6, A Christmas Wedding. 7 is Love at First Sight. And 8 is this one that is just out now, A Murder Solved.
No, ladies and gentlemen, y'all can't go yet. You're going to have to wait till after the show because we're just getting started here. So when you write in that particular series, the end of the book leaves the reader dangling for the next book to continue journey. No?
No. Only in book 5 do I leave the reader dangling.
Hey.
That's the only one that leaves the reader dangling. All the other books come to a complete end, you know, with the villain. And usually what my end is 9 months later at some estate, a baby is born.
Mm.
be it a boy or a girl. I think once or twice I've even thrown in twins, just to change it up a bit. That's usually my end. But with A House Party to Die For, that's the only book that I have ever written that leaves the reader hanging at the end of the book.
Interesting.
And the reason I wrote A Murder Solved is because I had readers emailing me, yelling at me, "You've got to solve this murder for us. Who did it? Who did it, Lindsay? Come on. I'm gonna come through the internet and strangle you if you don't." So that's why I wrote the book. And I had no intentions. I had planned to just leave it unsolved. But then, a lot of my followers, were threatening me almost. So I figured, okay, they want the book. I'll give them the book. And I'm not going to be easy for them to follow.
That is too good. That is too good, Lindsay. The beauty of it is you have taken two genres, you've put them together, you've added history, you've added romance, you've added suspense, you even added a dangling participle, and the readers keep coming back for more. So the old adage of a guy can't write any kind of romance is bull hockey.
Garbage.
If a woman can write a spy novel, a guy can write romance.
Sure, why not?
Exactly.
I had one reader. It was right after the first one came out, La Contessa and the Marquis. She got halfway through the book. This is what she emailed me. I got halfway through the book and had to find out who the murderer was, so I went to the last chapter to find out. But I will promise you, I have gone back and finished reading the book up to there. She had to jump to the end of the book to find out who the murderer was. Because I do not make it easy for the reader.
So, no, ladies and gentlemen, y'all can't go now. You got to wait. So, let's talk a little bit about, I did some digging on you, and you, there was a interview you did, and y'all talked about the challenge of word prompts. Now, for the list, word prompts. Like if I give you a word, you have to build a story around that word, or you have to build something around. For instance, if I say bridge, one can build a story. It doesn't have to be a bridge, right?
No, it could be a bridge between two stories. It could be a bridge between this world and another world. It can be a bridge that you walk over. It could be a bridge that blocks you from going forward for whatever reason.
Could be a music bridge.
Yeah.
It could be
or
the
could bridge,
be bridge of one's
on
nose.
Car.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what people that don't write sometimes don't understand is as wordsmiths, we can take one word and create something that is totally out of character with what most people would think that word stood for. Would that be a correct statement?
That's pretty correct, yeah.
Which we have fun doing.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, a bunch of years ago, I was with a group, and we would write a short 300-word thing based on a word, and that was all it was. We just had a word, and we had to write on that.
Would it be fair to say that doing that increased your craft?
Pardon?
Would it be fair to say that in doing that thing, that one word like that, and creating a story, increased your craft? And it made you stretch imagination beyond what it normally have been stretched.
breaking up a little bit. I don't know whose end, if yours or mine. But creating a story out of it. It's a great mind exercise to do. And but it's because, you know, and depending on the person, now I write Regency. So if I take a, if I'm given a word such as bridge, my first thought is a wooden bridge, rickety wooden bridge over a stream, with and it doesn't even have guardrails on the side. Now, somebody else who writes contemporary might think of a steel girdered bridge, and they would write something along, you know, based on that. Somebody who, you know, is really interested in music, they would, you know, would be a bridge on a song. So whatever your interest is, whatever you write is how you're going to interpret that word. And, that's what makes writing so much fun.
Would it also be fair to say that it's also sometimes the way the reader interprets what we write is totally different from the way we interpret what we write?
Yes, and yes, I guess you could say that. Writing Regency, I use words, and I will use words in certain ways that would not necessarily be used in contemporary writing. I also have to be very careful of my words that I use. There are a lot of words, you know, there are words that I want to use when I'm writing narrative or dialogue. But before I write it, I look it up in the dictionary to find out if it was, you know, if it was around in that time period. Example, the word thug, T-H-U-G. I used that word in a story. And as it turned out, that when the time period the story was set, the word had not gotten into the English lexicon by then. It was a couple of years later. So I had to change the word to something else. I can't remember what I changed it to. And the same thing with stiletto. If I use the word stiletto, now the first thing, somebody, especially a woman, might think of is a stiletto heel, but it also refers to a knife, a thin-bladed knife. So you have to be careful. If you're going to use the word stiletto, you have to make sure that the person, the reader, understands that it's either a stiletto heel or is it a stiletto knife. Choosing the right word for the situation and for the time period is very important. You just can't throw words down on a page and hope that they're going to be right. It's very important to have the right words.
Because readers will call us out on it every time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Same thing with places.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
If we don't do our homework, they will call us out, especially people that live in those places, and you're trying to be real and talk about the place as it is. Oh no, that's not the way this is. You don't know what you're talking about, which makes us lose our credibility.
Yeah.
You also have another series out, and that is under the Marks and Regency Mysteries, correct?
Marks and Regency Mystery Series. That's a 6-book series. But the way I kind of left it, it could continue on. And it does. But it continues on 18 years later with Lady Jolene Markson, the senior daughter to the Earl and Countess of Hampshire, where she is Lady Jolene, now takes up the reins of what her parents had done, and that was solving the impossible. And in the process, getting Bow Street runners mad at them because they were always able to solve the problem before Both would be good. Another little dig on the police back then, and so that, like I said, that was a 6-book series ending with The Hunt Ends. The first one in that series is The Masked Lady and the Murder, and that was a fun series to write. And actually,
it looks like it.
The spinoff series, A Lady Jolene Mystery, is a fun series to write also. And that first one in that one is Save a Lady. And I have a very interesting secondary character in this Lady Jolene series. And I'd rather not say who it is because that would spoil it for the reader.
Well, by all means, we don't want to spoil anything because I'm sitting here looking. Ladies and gentlemen, let me just read this to you a minute. The first one, The Masked Lady and the Murder Book. When Lord Robert Markson, Viscount of Hampshire, is forced to return to England to find out who murdered his father and older brother, he's in for a surprise. It comes in the guise of Lady Christina Rosewood, daughter to the Earl and Countess of Crossington. To many, she's quartz, but to him, a multi-faced diamond. While recovering from an attempt on his life, which thrust them closer together, they work through emotions for each other while sorting through letters sent to his mother years ago. Slowly, they're able to discover the one man who could have set the murders in motion. The only problem, he's been dead for years, so who could it be, and more importantly, why now? Once all the evidence is compiled, the answer is something neither could believe, as a threat comes from within the late Viscount's house. The second in that book is The Guilty Countess. The third in that series is Highland Gold Book. The fourth is Brotherly Love. The fifth is Highland Rome.
Let me stop you for a second. Brotherly Love is an interesting book.
Oh, yeah?
My editor. It is, yes. Because in the previous books, I had brought in Ethan, Christina's older brother. And my editor at the time, even still now, she kept saying, why are you doing this? Why are you treating him this way? He needs his own book. So that's where Brotherly Love came from. It came from my editor. She wanted me to write a book about Ethan. And in essence, what it did was it showed the reader that, yeah, he can be a pain in the butt, but he's also a really nice guy. Because he would always stick his – Ethan worked for the Crown, doing things that normal gentlemen wouldn't do. Necessary. And he also had contacts in France. And so Ethan would show up at the most inopportune time and say, well, it's this way, or it's that way, or it's this, you know. And Christina would get mad and, want to hit him. And so my editor convinced me, yes. That's how Brotherly Love came about. It was a book about Ethan, really, and what he had to go through.
And then the fifth in the series is A Highland Romance, and then the sixth book is the one that you released in July, correct?
No, I'm not online. The sixth book, A Hunt Ends, that one, hang on a second, I'm not online, but I can find out. That I released last year. The one that I released in July, the one that was released in June of this year, was keep all this stuff organized.
When did you release Emily Dayhill CID?
Oh, that was years ago. That was years ago. Those are just sitting at home, so to speak. I don't know what I'll do with those.
Are they still in print?
No, they're not available.
They sounded very interesting.
No,
found it extremely interesting.
No, I didn't. The Hunt Ends. There we go. The Hunt Ends was released last year. That was the last book in the series.
Then you've got the Radcliffe family too.
Oh yes, that one. Right now, I've got two outs: the Duke's Bride and the Viscount's Bride. The Duke's Bride introduces the main character and the Duke of Kettering and his future bride to the reader. And what's interesting, once again, with that series, as the series goes along, I bring in characters from a previous book. I'll bring them into the current one that I'm writing. Because this is a whole family and series. And so it's similar with the Rogues and Rakels, except the Rogues and Rakels are not family so much as they are with the Radcliffes. And right now I've got those two out, and next year I'll be releasing a ladies' gentleman and the Blind Viscount.
You write all the time, don't you?
Yes, ma'am. I'm retired. I write. Well, actually, I do have a job. I write. I'm not retired. I write 6 to 8 hours a day.
I was going to say, you want to rephrase that. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Lindsay is not kidding. As writers, if we're serious writers, this is what we do, because he will tell you, once we start writing, until we hit a roadblock, we can't stop or we lose that train. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes. Yes. And what happens if I hit a bump in the road and I can't figure out what I have to do next, I get up and I go walk around. Go outside, have a smoke, yes, I smoke. Or something like that. To get away from the computer, I go out and do something. I'll get my mind back on track.
Do you find that when your mind's at rest, when you're asleep, that's when the characters start messing with you?
I wish they'd shut up sometimes when I'm sleeping. They crawl into my brain.
I understand that.
I've got characters in my brain all the time. A new story ideas and stuff like that. And, there's just not enough hours in the day and days in the year for me to get all these stories written down. I'm planning, basically, for the Radcliffe family series, they're going to be a total of 10 books in that series.
Wow.
A minimum. The Lady Jolene Mystery series, there's going to be 6 books in that series. And with the Rogues and Rakel series, there's either going to be 8 or 9. I haven't decided if I'm going to have a 9th book in the series or not. That I'll decide early next year if I'm going to do a 9th book for that series. Because each one, because by the end of the 8th book, everything is tied up. You've got everybody who needs to get married is married. Everybody who doesn't need to get married doesn't get married. And everybody who needs to dance the hangman's jig has danced the hangman's jig. And dance the hangman's jig is kind of is my catchphrase for hanging. It's so boring writing hanging. So I use they dance the hang. A week later they were met the hangman. They danced the hangman's jig outside of Newcastle prison. Outside of Newgate.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, for those of y'all who do not know what Newgate is. Newgate is a famous prison in London, and they used it quite frequently for royalty and for the common man.
Actually, a lot of, yeah. Unless you were really, really special royalty, then you would go to Windsor Castle.
our London Bridge.
Yeah. And, of course, back before, you know, in the period that I write, you know, the person was hung and it was basically they were strangled is what it was, because they didn't have, I can't remember when the drop, when they came up with the idea of using the drop, which would break the neck. Basically, you know, for the most part, you know, that now, you know, at this period, they were hung and they choked to death. It was a rather very unpleasant way to die. Slowly.
Long. It was long and painful.
Yeah. And,
now, I read something else about you. I told you, do deep dives on people. You say that you are really an introvert. Now, ladies and gentlemen, most of us as writers are. I've been faking it for a lot of years. And it's not because we don't like people. In my case, it's because people make me tired because I'm an empath. So I pick up on every emotion, every feeling, and every nuance in a crowd of people. You, to me, and I could be wrong, but you are an introvert because that's where you are in life. You like writing, just leave you alone and let you write because there's too many people in your head as it is.
Right. I mean, when I go to, I have a people, you know, sometimes people kid me about, you know, kidding me and say that I'm OCD. I have OCD. I do certain things, certain ways, certain time, you know, at certain times.
Mm-hmm.
People could almost, you know, in a lot of cases, people could almost set that clock by me just about. I go into town, I come out of town, and I don't go back into town until the next day. And they're all quick trips. You know, boom, boom, boom. Post office, Murphy's, HEB, Starbucks. Those are my four routine stops. Occasionally, I'll go to Target. But you know, it's just anyways from an hour to an hour and a half. I'm back home, and then sitting at my desk, and I start writing. My time driving to and from town is used to think. Think about what I'm going to be writing that day, or if I'm in the idea, or if I'm going to be starting a new story, how I'm going to start it, what's going to be the beginning of the new story, and what have you. But then, then I just come back home, sit down, and I start writing. I've got the TV on, and that's it.
Well, to me, being OCD is my life too. I live a very structured life because my husband is disabled. And I have to, there's things I have to do with him. So I have to live this structured life with the four businesses I run, plus taking care of him, plus taking care of the house, plus taking care of everything else that would normally be split. So I understand that routine. It's not that we're OCD, it's just that we live a very structured life. In your case, when you're in the car going to town, that's your time away from your computer, so you can regenerate your batteries.
Yeah. And like yesterday, going in and coming out of town, I just couldn't get my mind on the story at all. But today, when I went in and came out, boom, everything came to me. And I got back to the house and I started writing.
And you have days like that.
Yeah. And so, you know, I had some other stuff that I could do, so I took care of the other stuff besides. And then, like today, I said, today I got back to the house and sat down and I started writing, and I knocked out 1,300 words in about 3 hours. And the thing is, too, yeah, we're introverts, but, you know, we're kind of introverted because, you know, our world is our book, whatever we're writing.
Yep.
And so that's what we think about. That's, for the most part, that's all we think about. You know, sometimes, you know, we do have to, you know, think about other things, other people around us and things like that. But in a lot of cases, we're just thinking about our writing and how we do it and what we're doing.
And we can't not think about it, because if you're like me, those characters just will not shut up.
No kidding. You could almost say, "Hi, I'm Lindsay." You could almost say, "Hi, I'm Lindsay. I'm an addict." So I take it to writing.
Yeah. That is true. I wonder if we need a 12-step program for addiction to writing.
I hope not.
Me too.
I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
I would go insane.
Yeah, basically my two addictions are writing and coffee.
That's about right. Because nobody speaks to me until I have coffee in the morning. If my phone rings before I've had coffee, they don't like the person that's on this end of the telephone.
Yeah.
And especially if I had a bad night.
But no, it's...
So, believe it or not, our hour is almost up. It happens so fast.
Yes, I know.
It runs. Yeah, it's here and then it's gone. It's that fast. So in the closing 3 or 4 minutes that we have left, tell the folks the name of all your books, where you can be found. And no, y'all can't go now. You got to wait until this show's over with. And what's coming out?
Okay. You've heard, okay, let's see. In the Radcliffe Family series that is out now, The Duke's Bride and The Viscount's Bride. Next year, Ladies, Gentlemen, and The Viscount. In the... Rogues and Raquel series, I'll read them off one last time. The Contessa and the Marquis, An Earl's Queen, Married by Christmas, My Lady Valentine, A House Party to Die For, A Christmas Wedding, Love at First Sight, and my newest release, A Murder Solved. And I have 6 more in the Marks and Family Regency Mystery series. And in the Lady Jolene Mystery Series, I have out now the To Save a Lady. And next year, probably, or the year after, is the release of A Traitor to the Crown will be coming out. That's book 2 in the series. So I've got one in the Lady Jolene series coming out next year, 2 in the Radcliffe series coming out, possibly a 9th one in the Rogues and Raquel series, and I've also got 2 in a new series, The Perfect Lady. The first one is The Earl's Lady, and that'll be coming out next year, and then followed by The Privateer's Lady.
Wow.
Not the Pirate Lady, Privateer. All of those are written, by the way. Actually, if I wanted to, I've got enough books written that I could be releasing them all the way up until 2019, depending on how many books I release a year.
Excellent. Well done. Now, where can you be found?
All my books are available on Amazon only. Some of them are in print, but they're all the ebooks are in the Kindle Unlimited program. So you can borrow it, you know, download it to your Kindle phone, Kindle app on your phone or your tablet or your computer, read it, and then of course it'll go back up. You read pages and things like that. So but like I said, I do have a few that are in print. The print sales are 0 really, so I don't bother. I decided not to bother putting them in print because it's just not worth it. Maybe someday I'll throw a couple more in print. I'm not sure. Like I said, they're all available on Amazon.
Can people find you on Facebook?
People can find me on Facebook, Lindsay Downs, LindsayDownS. I'm also on LinkedIn, Google+, Twitter, Goodreads. I think that's about it.
So, ladies and gentlemen, there's a whole lot of places y'all can find Lindsay. Be sure and friend him on Facebook and go and get his books, because I promise you, you will not be sorry. Tomorrow night, since I had a brain cramp today and didn't know what I was doing, tomorrow night, Ellie Perez will be on. She is another one that has been very patient with me. I cannot wait to interview her. On Friday night, author Sabine Priestley will be on. And then on Saturday night at 9 o'clock, because I am taking my son out to dinner for his birthday, so we're moving Joan Hazel to 9 o'clock instead of 8 o'clock. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Lindsay for being on the show. And Lindsay, once the show goes off live, stay on the line for a few minutes because I need to tell you some things. But I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart.
My pleasure. And one last thing. If any of you listeners out there get my books, I would strongly urge getting them in order of number, of release. That way you won't get lost.
Well, that's a good advice. Well said. But y'all all know that there are things that I believe in. One of those things is paying things forward, and that's just why I bring artists on the show, because this is not my show. This is y'all's show as a listener and as the artist. It is important to me to pay it forward. You know, a lot of people talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. Well, I hope at the end of my days that the thing that is remembered about me is that not only did I talk that talk, but I walked that walk. So always pay it forward, ladies and gentlemen. Do things without expecting anything in return, because the investment is very rewarding. And I also say, don't just feel special. Be special, because anybody can feel special, but it takes somebody being special to really be special. The difference between who you are and who you want to be is what you do. Think about that one, because you can be someone today, and what you do today and tomorrow will be who you become. One day you'll be just a memory for some people. So do your best to be a good one. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. And how you leave others feeling after having had an experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, that is indeed your trademark. And I hope that every listener out there and every one of my guests goes away feeling like they've had a good experience with me, because that is what I want my trademark to be.
It was fun.
Now, if you want to achieve greatness, ladies and gentlemen, stop asking permission, because nobody's going to give it to you. Would that be fair, Lindsay?
It's forgiveness, and it is permission.
Thank you. So tomorrow night, join us at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time with author L.A. Perez. Friday night, Sabine Priestley, and Saturday night at 9 o'clock, Joan Hazel. Lindsay, I want to thank you again for coming on the show, my dear, and spending an hour with me. It is an honor and a privilege.
My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are, the pleasure is all mine, my darling. I had a ball. I don't know about you. Can't wait for you to come back. I want to thank all of you for putting up with my scratchy voice and my coughing. I didn't mean to cough in your ear. So remember, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, this is Off the Chain with your host, Yvonne Mason, and my guest, Lindsay Downs, sending you a wonderful, wonderful good evening. Okay, we're off the air, but this will go up into archives. What I wanted to tell you is when we get off the show and this thing goes up into archives, I'm going to post the link on my page and I'm going to tag you in it. Take the show and use it any way you want to. This is my gift to you.
I will. Thank you.
And then You are welcome. Well, it gets better. Tomorrow, I'm going to post it on SoundCloud, Spreaker, Mixcloud, Podcast.com, and Podcast Garden. I will send you those links. Yeah, I will send you those links as well. The show's also heard on iTunes, FM.com, and TuneIn Radio and YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah, so you're going to be heard all over the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. My gift to you, my darling.
Thank you, ma'am. Yeah. Now I get to go right.
Yes, you do. So thank you for a lovely, lovely evening, and go and write some wonderful, wonderful stories.
Had a lot of fun.
Me too. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.